Hi, I'm Holly Zachariah, a crime reporter at the Columbus Dispatch, and we're here today in our podcast studio to talk about a stretch of the city of Columbus that seems to have been forgotten over the years for what happens on Sullivan Avenue. In the studio with me today, we've got two guests who know that stretch of the city and what happens on the Sullivan Avenue corridor probably better than anyone else. We've got Columbus Police Sergeant Fred Brophy, who's been an officer in this city in some of its roughest neighborhoods for 24 years. These days, he heads the Safe Streets Initiative in Franklinton and parts of the Hilltop, and his police substation is on Sullivan Avenue. We also have Hannah Estabrook, a tireless advocate for victims of human trafficking, and she's a coordinator at Catch Court, the Franklin County Municipal Court that helps those victims of human trafficking escape that lifestyle and find recovery. And she's just about to open a full-time drop-in center on Sullivan Avenue for those women. It's called Sanctuary Night, and it's a place where the women of the streets can find safety, solace, comfort, care, help, and hope. So what we've done at the Dispatch, we have a three-part series where we take a look at Sullivan Avenue, one of the first streets that were developed in what would eventually become Columbus. The Scioto River proved to be its enemy, however, and it formed a natural barrier, separating the gritty working man's Franklinton neighborhood from what became a much more prosperous downtown. People seem to forget the drugs, the prostitution, the homelessness, and the crime that pervade Sullivan Avenue. And that changed in August of 2018, when Columbus police vice officer named Andrew Mitchell trapped a woman in his unmarked car and shot and killed her just a block off Sullivan Avenue. That kickstarted a lot of things in the city, one of which shown a spotlight on what happens down at Sullivan Avenue. So we're going to take a closer look at a three-mile stretch of that corridor from Dodge Rec Center in Franklinton to Hague Avenue on the Hilltop, and we're going to find out a little bit more about what life is like out there and what can maybe be done to help the people who live there. Welcome, Sergeant Brophy.
Well, thank you.
So we're going to start with you. I spent some time, Kyle Robertson, our photographer, and I spent some time with you on the Sullivan Avenue corridor. And I think one of the things that we heard you say and that we heard from virtually everyone we talked to is, why can't they do something about this? Why don't the police, we see the prostitutes walk up and down the street. We see them get into cars. We see them approach people. Why are the police looking the other way? And it's not really that simple, is it?
It really isn't that simple. It's not a lack of willingness on the police officer's behalf to, and we really don't want to ignore this problem. You know, most officers that work out on the West Side that work in these neighborhoods truly do care about improving the quality of life of the people who live there. And at the same time, we recognize we have a duty, you know, to the women that are out there on the street engaging in this behavior, or, you know, this actions. But, you know, the elements of a crime have to be met for us to really be able to enforce the law. And it's not illegal for somebody to walk on a sidewalk. It's not illegal for somebody to talk to somebody on the side of the roadway. And it's not illegal for somebody to just get into a car and take a ride. Because if you think about all those things, that's something an average citizen would do when they get into an Uber. I mean, it's not a crime. What the elements of prostitution is, or solicitation for prostitution, we have to be able to say that there is an agreement and an exchange for something of value, such as money, for the performance of a sex act. And the officers on patrol will never get the element of that crime just by seeing somebody walking down the street or somebody leaning into a car or getting into a car and even driving around the corner. So, you know, we can't infringe upon people's civil rights just on a hunch.
And in fact, you even told us, let's say you come around the corner on your bike and you come across two people having sex in a vehicle. What do you have there?
You have the, I mean, that's a misdemeanor crime of public indecency.
That's right.
at best. So, and it's still, we're still not at the point of, you know, being able to, you know, that's a low-level offense that they really don't want us incarcerating for these days. So it's going to be an issuing us a citation at best if that's what we get. Because, but the thing about it is, you know, people who engage in this are very careful. They go to places where they can't get caught by us just rolling around the corner. So
that kind of sets the stage for the project that we did here at the Dispatch. When we looked at this 3-mile stretch of Sullivan Avenue, one of the things we found out was every metric that is used to measure the health of a community, Sullivan Avenue is the worst in our city. Just some examples. Between 2017 to July of this year, more than half of the 1,880 prostitution arrests made in this city were on Sullivan or just off it. More than half. Police investigated 1,100 drug complaints just along Sullivan Avenue last year. There are more than 1,000 vacant homes in the 3 police precincts that touch parts of Sullivan Avenue, and 626 vacant homes in Precinct 19 alone, and that covers the heart of Franklinton. The statistics just go on and on. So we know that human trafficking, prostitution, drugs, homelessness, blight, and poverty that's the intersection of all those things. Hannah, coming from your side of things, what do we have to do to get the community and the general public to better understand how we got here? Those women didn't get up one morning and say, you know what, I think I'm going to sleep in the bushes on Sullivan Avenue for the next 4 years. Yeah. How do we get here, and how do we get people to care about that?
Yeah, thanks for the question. I have a friend who says, yeah, nobody grows up with a prostitute Barbie, you know? Nobody dreams of having that as their life. And so I think it's important that the community understand the push and pull factors of what drive women into and allure women into the lifestyle of prostitution. So understanding, for example, that some of the push factors, like you mentioned, like poverty, is one of the biggest ones. You know, things like abuse and neglect in childhood, you know, that early childhood trauma is a huge push factor. And then, of course, early exposure to things like drugs and early addiction. Those are all things that push these women into this life. And then, of course, you know, then the pull factors become access to quick money. When I can't pay my bills, when I can't take care of my kids, this is a way I can make money very quickly. You know, when I have a substance use disorder and I'm dope sick, this is a way that I can have easy access to the drugs that I need just to be well, not to be high, to be well, you know. If I have been dealing with abuse and trauma, neglect my whole life, and that's what's normal to me, then this provides a sense of comfort, familiarity, even a sense of family. I mean, these women, they talk about each other like they're mothers and sisters and daughters with each other. There's a real, real street family mindset. And I think the community just needs to understand those things are very real, you know, that again, just to sort of underscore that this is not typically something that a woman wants to do. Particularly, I would say if a woman wants to do sex work, she's not going to be walking on Sullivan Avenue, right?
Right.
She's
right.
going to be in a nice hotel somewhere in the suburbs. Not that that's always, you know, the case of someone who's choosing it. But yeah, I think that's really important to understand and hopefully just build some compassion.
So what do we do? What do we do to get people who've never driven down Sullivan Avenue or who drive down Sullivan Avenue and look the other way to care about what goes on down there? To ask both of you that question. What can we do to help people understand this is affecting you in some way and you should care about this? First, just, if for no other reason, because you're human. We should care about other humans, right? So what can we do to shine a light down there, but to translate that into help for Sullivan Avenue?
Mm-hmm. I think people probably need to, you know, take a look upon it with also some hope. Like, I think it's just so easy to drive down Sullivan Avenue and just see darkness and just see hopelessness and kind of just think, man, it's never going to get better. I think the gift of my position, you know, is that, yes, I do a drop-in center on Sullivan Avenue. And yes, I live, you know, in Franklinton, but I work in a court system where we are actually seeing women, you know, be rehabilitated, and see women, in fact, who get to the point where they want to go back to Sullivan Avenue and like rescue their sisters from the streets. And I think that people need some of those hope filled stories. And so, you know, there are organizations, Catch Court is certainly one of them locally, but there are lots of good organizations doing good work for this population. Show up and ask questions and hear some stories that will blow your mind, you know, and know that there is in fact hope.
Before I have you answer, go ahead, Sergeant.
Well, so I want to piggyback on that. Yeah. And Hannah, I think you could probably agree with this, that, you know, the rest of the community separated from Sullivan Avenue cannot just ignore the problems of Sullivan Avenue, because there is a nexus between your community and what's happening there. Whether it's the Johns coming down there and preying upon, you know, the women that are out there working. And at the same time, and we've seen this, These women come from the suburbs sometimes. They've come from the homes of people that have no connection whatsoever with Sullivan Avenue, but it all ends up being interrelated. So even if you can't find the compassion to say, hey, I care about my fellow human being, understand that this is still something that touches your community and your neighborhood, regardless of where you are in the greater city area.
Well, you know, I'm glad you mentioned that, because one of the things I wanted to talk to you about, we'll get back to the hope, because I agree. Mm-hmm. And this three-part series that we did at the Dispatch, this is a good time to say it is dark.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of darkness in this series. And we worked hard to make sure that we also, it wasn't completely hopeless. Mm-hmm. Because if that's the case, there's no sense us writing about it. Mm-hmm. So we have some of those women who go back out there to save their sisters, those kinds of things. And we really tried to find, you know, shine a light on the good as well. But I want to get back to you, Sergeant, because you just mentioned how this affects, this intersects with your own community. And again, when Kyle and I were riding along with you and spending time on Sullivan, the first vehicle that you pulled over was a man from the suburbs.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a fairly brand new, it was a nice vehicle.
A very nice vehicle.
Yes, it was a Jeep. And he fit all the statistics that we think that show us that the men that are down there looking for women are, you know, as I said, the statistics bear out, educated, suburban, often married men.
Mm-hmm.
And as we talked about that, I think we can talk about the women forever. But what do we do about the demand? And what do we do about the people who are preying on our city's most vulnerable? You have some thoughts on that, don't you?
So, yeah, I mean, that's one of the things we really, really struggle with, because, you know, we don't have, absent doing reversals, which is where we put a female officer on the street and we try to get Johns caught in the act of the solicitation, the average patrol officer who has daily contact with this on a regular basis, we know who our girls are, we know who the Johns are. But, you know, without getting the elements of the Solicitation Act, all we can really do is pull them over when they make a traffic violation. We're trying to do an education where we leave them a John letter saying, hey, this is what you're doing. You're victimizing people. You can't do this. We can write them a ticket for that minor traffic violation and send them on their way. But the invariably, it'll get paid in the mail. There's no accountability to it. There's no follow-up. We don't know how this is solving or even resolving our issues. So what we were hoping is at some particular point in time, we would have a little bit more teeth into that. You know, we would have John laws that would allow us to order somebody into court. So then they got to take time out of their day, go appear in front of a magistrate and a judge to say, you know, explain your behaviors, how and hold people more accountable than just a minor traffic violation that's going to get paid in the mail and nobody's going to hear any more about it.
And other communities have had some success with that, right, across the country. I mean, other communities have, as you say, the way I read the law in some other states and communities is if I'm pulled over for turning red on red when I wasn't supposed to, and there is a known prostitute in my vehicle, then a letter goes home that says this is a mandatory court appearance because I had a known. He's not being charged with anything related to prostitution.
Correct. It's just making that person have to go in front of court, in front of a judge, and answer to what was going on that night. It's not really an enhancing of the offense other than that. And like, it wasn't a unique idea to me. I read that somewhere else. You know, when we start looking across the country, what are some best practices that are working in other places to help address these issues? That's a tool we would love to have.
And let's be honest about that. His wife's going to know.
Yes.
His mm-hmm. wife or his daughter
and that's
gets
the
mail on, right? That's the thing. Hannah, do you, as an advocate, because human trafficking and prostitution is so much at the root of what we've seen in the erosion of the Sullivan Avenue corridor, do you think we do enough about demand? Mm-hmm. And do you have some thoughts on
sure.
how we can help that corridor that way?
You know, I think one of the things that's been happening, or there's some movement around legislation, actually, of changing the law. Because right now, currently, the way the Ohio law is written, soliciting is the same crime, whether you're buying or selling. And so there's a little bit of advocacy around having those be two different crimes, which just allows for example, if someone is charged with selling sex and they're suspected that they might be a victim of trafficking, and at worst and at best, you know, an indigent, you know, broken person, that person shouldn't be, for example, fined a high court fee. But that a buyer of sex, that's a person that you might actually say, you know, we're going to go ahead and slap you with this fine or this, you know, class or whatever the sanction ends up being. But I think that it's a compelling argument, right? To just look at, can we separate these two from saying that they're the same thing, and allow us to do some different things within the court system. So that's one thing. But honestly, I think this is just one of those epic systemic things of educating all people, but even thinking about young boys, young men, you know, about how we talk about women, how we treat women. And I don't even want to genderize it, like just how we treat people. We're not commodities. We're not objects all across the board. And I just think that's important work. And so, you know, we think a lot about educating our young women about the dangers of human trafficking, but are we putting the same effort into educating our young boys and men about, you know, the same kinds of things?
And, you know, I'm glad that you brought up sort of this generational aspect of it, because again, specifically as we move back specifically to the corridor, you know, Sergeant Brophy, when I was out there with you, you talked a lot about this was built over decades, mm-hmm. and it's not going to be fixed. You know, Sullivan Avenue isn't going to be, there's not going to be a rebirth overnight. And just for some context, we explain in our series in the Dispatch, if you look at Franklinton, after the Franklinton flood wall was built here in 2004 to stop the flooding, the Scioto River consistently leaving its banks and swamping Franklinton, they promised prosperity after the flood wall was built in this city. And we've seen it. We've seen it closer to the downtown. We've seen it in parts of Broad Street. We've seen it on Rich and Town. It has not reached Sullivan Avenue. I remember you telling me, Sergeant, you said, you know, it's sort of this spider web where the decaying neighborhood means that folks who have nowhere else to go come here. You know, they struggle with addiction, homelessness. The drug dealers follow because that gives them, you know, ready access to users and vacant houses to operate out of. Traffickers move in to prey on the vulnerable, and the Johns come in because that's where the girls are. How was it that it was able, all of those things, all of those vices were able to concentrate on Sullivan like they have?
That's a good question, isn't it? So, I mean, and it's one of those things where did the chicken come before the egg? I look at it, I hate to say this, I look at it as, you know, when an area begins to get neglected and then, you know, one person ignores the litter, one person ignores the traffic light being out, one person ignores the pothole, and the next thing you know, everybody starts ignoring everything else. You get to a neighborhood is really kind of apathetic, and in a neighborhood that becomes apathetic is just a ready place for this to start to exist. And as it aged and the houses fall apart and they become more vacant, less desirable as far as rents or home ownerships, then, and as all of those things come together, then now we have a community that, or an area, I should say, because it lacks a community that says we're going to ignore this. It's so you have an area that says, okay, well, it just becomes the place for the things that nobody wants to pay attention to all of a sudden happen. And once one feeds in, then like you said, I mean, it didn't start with a prostitute standing on the street corner. It's, you know, it started with the, you know, the downside of the neighborhood in the first place, which facilitated, you know, all of the other things to happen. And then people who profit off of other people's misery, you know, the drug dealers will move in because there is a market. Human traffickers will work out of here because there is a demand and a supply on both sides, fed by all of those issues that kind of pull that neighborhood down. I don't think it's coordinated. I don't think it happens because somebody plans for this to happen. It just, all of a sudden, everybody kind of stop planning and stop thinking about, well, this is what we're going to do.
So, Hannah, as an advocate who is out in that area all the time, and you're about to open your drop-in center, maybe you can explain a little bit for readers what that drop-in center, what those drop-in centers are like. And then maybe talk a little bit about, not everyone thinks they're the answer, because we do have a conglomerate. Everything's happening in the same spot, but you need to help people where they are, right?
That's right.
So can you sort of explain what the drop-in center is? And then the same as Sergeant, talk about how you think this area became so concentrated with ills.
Yeah. I don't know that I have as much historical knowledge, actually, as Sergeant Brophy about, you know, kind of how we got here. I'm sort of a gentrifier, you know, I've lived in the neighborhood about 5 years, right? And so I love my neighbors and I'm committed to, you know, doing everything in my power, to make it a safe place for all people, including people who live there their whole lives. And, but I'm so grateful, actually, to hear your perspective on that. I mean, it does seem to me that Sullivan Avenue feels like this siloed street. You've got all these, you've got Broad and Rich in town coming into the fancy downtown area, and Sullivan just stops at a rec center, and it just doesn't go any further. So it's just kind of this convenient, like, the place that holds a lot of our secrets. And it's, you know, you think about people, you know, the ladies refer to 5 to 7 a.m. as pervert hour, you know, and that you have got these men on their way to their downtown jobs who stop and, you know, solicit for prostitution in the morning on their way to work. And they can do that on Sullivan Avenue. They might feel a little bit more exposed on Broad Street or Rich Street or whatever. So
I had no idea. This is the first I've heard that.
Yeah. Sure. Pervert hour. You know, so anyway, that's that. The drop-in centers, and there are several now along Sullivan Avenue that are really trying to meet the needs of these women, which is absolutely wonderful. And the drop-in centers just generally are providing for basic needs, right? So we're providing a meal, we're providing, you know, things like water, laundry, clothing, hygiene items. You know, there's a drop-in center that has a shower inside of it, so women are able to come in and bathe. Most of us are also partnering with some kind of healthcare professional to come in and provide, you know, STD testing and, you know, Hep A shots, all the things you might imagine that would be helpful for these women. So, and then importantly, I think we're all just trying to be consistent. We're just trying to show up for these women.
Because no one ever has,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
No one's ever.
Yes, exactly. And my attitude is just like the research suggests that the two things necessary for women to actually get out of prostitution is that they need a place to go and they need to believe on some level that they can do something different with their lives. They need a little bit of hope. And I think by opening our doors and providing a safe space, we're doing both things. We're giving them a place to go and we're instilling in them a little bit of hope, because every time they see us and they start to realize, oh, they're not going anywhere. They're showing up on Christmas Eve. They're showing up on New Year's Eve. You know, they're showing up in the dead of winter. We're here for you, you know, and we're not pushing you to do anything. But when you're ready, you know that we will take you to treatment, you know, and we have done that and we will continue to do that. And so I think the critique of the drop-in center is, oh, you're just making it easier for these women to stay in prostitution. You know, we're just enabling. And again, I understand that argument. I understand where it's coming from, but just to say again, I think we're doing it with our eye on the exit strategy. We're doing it because we believe these women have so much worth and value that they can be and want to be great moms. Most of them are moms, you know, that they have tremendous potential, and we're going to meet them where they're at. It's a harm reduction model. You know, it says, as long as I'm breathing, there's still hope. And we've got a problem where people are stop breathing. I mean, we've got women dying out there. So we're hopefully keeping people breathing. And, we're just going to keep at it.
Well, and, you know, there are so many people who don't understand. They don't see with their own eyes the dedication it takes of everybody like you who's out there day in and day out in a very ugly, sad environment, offering hope. And I want to say to Columbus Police as well, you know, you'll see in this dispatch series that but for what happened with Andrew Mitchell shooting and killing Donna Dalton Castleberry off of Sullivan, the Columbus Police Vice Unit likely would not have been disbanded, and this light would not have been shown on Sullivan Avenue. And I think it's easy for listeners or residents of this community to think, well, it's just that police department again. And I want to say that for every woman who we talk to, whether I've been in catch court or when we embedded on Sullivan Avenue, and there were many, for every woman who said, those dirty cops, you know, did this to me or did that to me, there was another one who said, he brings me McDonald's every Thursday morning, or, you know, he knew I needed, you know, bandages for my blisters, and he brought me some. And when we were out with you, Sergeant Brophy, there was a moment where you went, there's this beautiful little butterfly garden on the hilltop, and you went, there was a woman just sitting on a bench, she was sick, and you went and talked to her and tried to get her to go, gave her the information on a drop-in center. What's it like to be an officer out there and see the decay, that both physical and moral, and not get discouraged? How do you not go home at night and think, I'm not making any difference?
Oh, that's hard, because the question is, that question many of us ask on a regular basis, because our victories are so small and so far between. It's very difficult sometimes to sustain that youthful drive that we have so fresh in our young officers, for them to go out on a I've worked our most challenging neighborhoods for 24 going on 25 years. I've been in law enforcement in Franklin County for 26 years. So, you know, that's a very valid question. How do you stay morally, ethically motivated to do good police work on a daily basis? I really, you know, I know we've had our challenges on the division of police, but by and large, every officer that works for me that I've surrounded myself and I've worked with have been good-hearted people who want to make the world a better place. We go out and we go to work every day, and we see, you know, the world at its worst. We see a lot of challenges. We never feel like we're making the right, you know, the amount of effort to the gain never seems to match itself. But at the same time, it's the small victories from time to time. It's just one or two moments in a week or every two that provide that, you know, hey, maybe I am doing something, and that does help. But it really is. It's a significant challenge to stay motivated, consistently do it. But I want to go. I think one of the things that really does help, this may be a good point to put this in is, so we talk about, you know, how desperate, how much of a big black hole the Sullivan Avenue corridor is, but, you know, the thing is we have daily conversations with people who live in this neighborhood, who have the hope, who you know, have the energy to go out and are really, really advocating for the community that they live in. And they want us there. They want to partner with us. They want to help, you know, help us do the job to make their neighborhood safer. And it's at those moments, I think, when officers are finally, and it's tough, but it's at those moments, I think, officers are like, you know what, this is why I do this. And it really helps bring both the hope of the community back to, you know, to say there's going to be a sunshine someday. I mean, that's going to happen. And hopefully, you know, those people, we can help make that sunrise happen.
You know, when we talked to some of those in our series, some of those longtime residents mm-hmm. on Sullivan Avenue who said, we're not going anywhere. This is our city. This is our street. It is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't like some of it, but this is home. Mm-hmm. And we, you know, we stay here. So one of the reasons we're publishing this series at the Dispatch now is because after the disbanding of Columbus Vice, we see now they've rolled out the new PACT unit. Mm-hmm. And remind me what PACT stands for. Police and
community together.
Police and community together. And so the police have a new philosophy, a new approach mm-hmm. out there on the streets. And certainly all over the city, but in Franklinton and the Hilltop and the Sullivan Avenue corridor. So maybe we can kind of wrap up to go back to hope. And the two of you can share what can be done out there. Do you have hope that the new PACT unit will be successful and make a difference in the Sullivan Avenue corridor and change lives out there? And then for Sullivan Avenue overall, what do we do about those vacant houses? And what do we do about the fact that there's no businesses out there except burner phone stores and
Herbert's Market.
And yes, and nice. Carryouts that they're carrying out all right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so those two things, where does the hope come from and what solutions do you see? Hannah, do you want to go first?
Sure. Well, first of all, I actually want to go back to what you said to answer this question, because you talked about the neighbors who, for better or worse, they want to stay. That is a tremendous resource that we are not tapping into enough. Like there are dedicated, lovely people who live along Sullivan Avenue and its, you know, close streets, who care, who really care about the neighborhood. And I think we just, you know, need to hear from them and follow their lead a little bit. But also ask if there are ways that we can further equip or resource them to make the changes that maybe they've even forgotten what it could be, you know, but just kind of coming alongside them as they dream. I think I'm encouraged because I see the 3 drop-in center. I see Lower Lights Ministries right there, you know, on Sullivan. I see just so much good work happening there. And we're building relationships with people who are otherwise disposable or viewed that way. And so I think that people or neighbors can also get involved with some of those local agencies, you know, Gladden Community Center. I mean, just other West Side, you know, go hang out at Dodge, you know, spend some time at Herbert's Market. Like, just, I know that sounds ridiculous maybe, but it's like talk to each other, talk to your neighbors. And just start showing up, you know, and supporting some of these organizations and the good work that's happening, because it is exciting, I think. I think there's really good work happening.
Terrific. Sergeant?
On the law enforcement side, you know, what we do on the Columbus Division of Police, I'm not going to look at PAC to say this is going to be the panacea that's going to change what's going on. What I've really liked seeing recently is a more holistic approach that was integrated in PAC, that we're going to look, you know, not just on the enforcement, we're going to make sure that we're providing, you know, sources, that we're funneling, you know, the people that we run into contact on the criminal side through the catch court, so that there isn't there's a parachute so that they can escape from this plane that's crashing. But at the same time, we run our Safe Streets programs in the summertime, where we're taking a more holistic approach at problem oriented policing, looking at some of the using and leveraging many different assets that the city has to address all of those underlying problems that has created this fertile soil that has allowed this to continue to flourish. You know, partnering with code enforcement to take a stronger approach on vacant structures and using the courts, the environmental court, to hold landlords more accountable, to you know, making sure that we're looking at every aspect of what has caused this to become a problem and addressing it holistically. Law enforcement is one of many tools. And so we need to continue to make sure that we're doing that in that manner.
Well, I can tell you from the dispatch's standpoint, our hope is that this will shine a light on a part of the city that deserves to be seen, mm-hmm. and that we can continue our reporting on what we've seen out there and witnessed firsthand, and begin to hold people accountable and find out how we can all come together as a community to make it better for the people mm-hmm. that live in that area, whether they're living in, you know, $100,000 home or in the bushes. Mm-hmm. Do either of you have any final thoughts, that things we didn't get to?
So I'm going to end with this. I've worked many different communities in Columbus as an officer in particular. When I got promoted, I fought very hard to go back to the West Side, because I feel like this is a community that needs good policing, needs good people that are going to be dedicated to it. I felt like I became part of that community when I was the high school resource officer at Columbus West High School. So it's more than just a job. It's really kind of a passion. Hopefully that as we get towards the later parts of my career, that maybe we can see some of the same changes in this community that I've seen in different neighborhoods I've worked throughout the city.
That's great. I'd love to just share one story as a way of just instilling some hope. So we had a woman who came into our drop-in center at Sanctuary Night probably about 2 months ago, and she looked particularly despondent. And so we just asked her, you know, are you done? Like, are you just tired and fed up? And she said, yeah. And so we said, you know, we'd be happy to take you to treatment tonight. And she lit up. She was so excited. And anyway, long story short, we took her to Mary Haven that night, and she was able to go through the detox process. And then she went on to a treatment center. I received a letter from her a couple weeks ago just saying that she was so grateful. She loved her life. Like, she just felt like she said you went on a limb for a junkie. And she talked about reconnecting with her kids and her mom. And actually, I just got a call from her today. So she's still doing well 2 months later. And, you know, that's the kind of thing. It took us like an extra, you know, 20 minutes that night to just care and give her a ride to treatment. And who knows what that investment will, you know, how that will play out, the impact on her kids' life, her family, her, you know, her own future. But yeah, that's something to just give people hope and say, like, there's a reason why we're there and why we're showing up.
Well, we appreciate that. And I'll just say on behalf of our team at the Dispatch, who worked months on this series, there's a reason that the two of you are in our podcast studio, because we really did embed in that neighborhood, and we saw just such care and compassion when necessary, enforcement when necessary, whatever it took at that moment. And we certainly as a team saw that the two of you really care about what happens on the West Side. And I know your community appreciates you, and we appreciate you coming in. So just to remind listeners, it's a 3-day series called Suffering on Sullivan. And you can find it at dispatch.com/Sullivan. And again, Hannah Estabrook, the coordinator from Catch Court in Franklin County, and Sergeant Fred Brophy from the Columbus Division of Police. We appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.